Well, the parable set before us this morning is greeted by preachers across the church with, well, let's just say not a lot of enthusiasm. I think my favorite comment in my readings over my preparations is simply this. The parable defies any fully satisfactory explanation. So, with our expectations set suitably low, let's see what we can do. The story is about a manager who shrewdly exploits his position to create a safety net for himself when he is fired due to financial mismanagement. And it is about his rich employer being so impressed by his shrewdness, his deep understanding of the ways of the world, that he commends him. And then Jesus wraps the story, which perhaps the strangest admonishment of his whole teaching ministry. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes. This is advice we see being taken to heart by billionaires and those on the billionaire track all over the world. It is not advice I like to hear from Jesus' lips. I am much more comfortable with what comes next. The observation that being faithful or dishonest in a little is a proof of faithfulness or dishonesty in much. And the warning that no one can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and wealth. Except, didn't the parable just tell us to use dishonest wealth shrewdly and promise us that God would commend us? No wonder preachers and others have tied themselves into epic knots trying to make this all fit together. An instinct that comes from the way many of us have been taught to read the Bible in general and parables in particular. First, we have been very well trained to assume that whichever man has the most power in the story represents God. This is an assumption that gets us into all kinds of trouble in many parables, not to mention the world. And then we have a tendency to read parables as allegories, where every character, every element has a one-to-one correspondence to some real-world person or thing or activity. And this works fine sometimes. For example, the woman who searches for her lost coin and then throws a party when she finds it. The woman is God, the lost coin is the repentant sinner, the party is God's rejoicing at welcoming the penitent home. It works less well for stories as complex as today's. And then finally, we expect Jesus to be clear about who's the good guy and who's the bad guy in the story. Clear about whether this is a story we are to emulate or if it's a story that serves as a cautionary tale. We rarely entertain the possibility that sarcasm and irony may have been part of Jesus' rhetorical toolkit. And so we are primed to hear whatever follows, and I tell you, as straightforward instruction. None of those assumptions serve us well in trying to understand this story and the lessons that follow it. This parable presents us with no just or merciful or noble character to stand in for God, and no redeemed character to stand in for us. No one in this story comes out looking very good. The manager is a crook. Those in debt to the rich man are complicit in the manager's crimes, and the rich man seems to lack any meaningful integrity or consistency of character. Indeed, these characters all seem to precisely illustrate the truth of the teaching that follows. They are dishonest in both small and large matters. And they have only one master, one priority, and that is their own wealth. And as followers of Jesus, we are to be the exact opposite of these characters in every way, except one. Like them, we are to be single-minded, dedicated, focused on our goal, and willing to do whatever is required in the pursuit of it. We are to be shrewd. This is a word that Jesus uses elsewhere when he tells his disciples to go out into the world shrewdly. We are to be creative and flexible in the service of our one master, God, who calls us to prepare for the kingdom of heaven. The rich man was impressed by the manager's capacity to stay focused on his goal, to work the system to get what he wanted. Perhaps in this way, the rich man does represent God, or maybe better represents Jesus, who calls us to set our eyes firmly on the kingdom and direct everything we are and everything we have to that goal. For the record, I'm still not comfortable with this story. It has defied a fully satisfactory explanation. But now my discomfort comes from a different place, a more familiar place. Now I am uncomfortable because I'm not sure I want to be that focused, that dedicated to the single-minded pursuit of the kingdom. I'm nervous about the way it may lead to a problematic kind of ends justify the means mentality, a difficult and awkward radicalism. And I am anxious about what it might mean for my own comforts, my own plans, my own priorities. But these discomforts, I think, are always at the heart of seeking to follow Jesus. This is what we must wrestle with all the time. Jesus was not inclined towards moderation. Jesus was not worried about being radical. And so we need to be careful about allowing our desire for temperance to tame Jesus' call. Instead, we need to be honest about that struggle, grateful for all that we have and all we have been created to be, and intentional about how we respond to the call to serve only God. Which brings me, rather tidily, if I do say so myself, to the topic of our stewardship program. I intend. Now, before you get too worried, the link to the gospel reading is not a moral lesson about giving all your money to the church. In fact, the I Intend program is not mostly about money at all, because when we make it mostly about money, we are falling into the same trap of putting money ahead of God, something that the church can do as well as individuals. Our lives, individual lives, our corporate life, is not and should not be mostly about money, nor should it be about ignoring money. Instead, our lives are about how we respond to God, who is the one who gave them to us, who is the one who sustains us, who is the one who redeems us, and who invites us to join in this joyful work of creativity and nourishment and healing. This is what stewardship, fully understood, is. Caring for, managing all the resources God has entrusted to us so that they can be used for God's purposes, for the flourishing of life the deepening of faith, and the building of the kingdom. And this program we are going to be using, the I Intend program, will help us think about five categories of resources: time, money, our physical and mental capacities, our particular talents unique to each one of us, and the environment in which we live. We will think about the ways in which these resources are fundamentally gifts, destined to be re-gifted, and we will explore what spiritual teachers, political thinkers, justice workers, and the Bible have to say about them. We will have the opportunity to reflect on our current relationships to these resources and discern what kind of changes or choices we might want to make for ourselves in the future. We will be invited to become more prayerful and more intentional about how we live so that we might more closely follow Jesus. The focus of each unit, so to speak, will appear in Sunday services in various ways: in Sunday school, in the preaching, in the prayers, in personal stories, and on the final Sunday of the unit, with an opportunity to include your written and confidential intention statements in offertory envelopes to be given to God. And those statements will make their way back to you in the next year for your own reflection. Full disclosure, the money intention statement will include an optional pledge card to be shared with the finance team. Each unit will also include an opportunity to learn more about some aspect of the theme through a workshop or a guest speaker. And these broader studies will help us think about how these resources are distributed in our world, can be put to the use of the good of all. Other learning resources will be shared in the weekly newsletter and the Story at Home study emails for people to do with as they wish. And last, but by no means least, each unit will be discussed in small groups where, through prayer and conversation, we will share our experiences, thoughts, and hopes with one another, strengthening our community as we support one another in our growth in faith. The sign-up sheets are at the back of the church. We are still looking for hosts, who are the people who will take responsibility for opening a space for a small group, which might be your home, it might be staking out a table at the coffee shop, or it could be here at the church, and for group leaders who will facilitate the conversation and just make sure everybody has the space to share. And then once we've got some of those spaces and times sorted out, you will be invited to sign up as a participant in the group. I sincerely hope that you will all engage with this program to the best of your ability. And I challenge you to push yourself just beyond your comfort level, to trust that this is a safe place to grow and to answer God's call to committed, intentional, maybe even to shrewd living in service to the kingdom.